Okay, so let's spend a few minutes just sitting quietly. I know you already did a meditation session, but it's nice to spend a few more minutes sitting quietly before we start the talk. And the talk will be about our precious human life. And then after the talk, we'll have a few minutes for questions and answers. So a few minutes, just sit quietly, watch your breath, let your mind settle down. Let's take a couple of minutes and contemplate our motivation before we actually begin. And to think, why are we seeking a spiritual path? What is it that we want? We want happiness and not suffering. We've been trying to get that happiness through various means our whole life, but we haven't found any lasting happiness or satisfaction to date. And that's because we've been looking outside of ourselves, thinking that getting external things and relationships and acknowledgement and so forth will fulfill us. But while it's brought us some pleasure, it really hasn't solved our spiritual yearnings or given us any lasting security. And so now we're looking spiritually, looking into our own minds and hearts in an attempt to discover what inside of us creates happiness and what inside of us creates misery. And then to learn how to increase the mental factors that create joy and meaning, and to decrease the ones that create suffering. So foremost among the factors that create joy is the altruistic intention, the aspiration to become fully enlightened for the benefit of all beings. And foremost of the troublemakers that create suffering are the self-grasping ignorance and the self-centered mind. So we want to learn the antidotes to those. So to increase our altruistic intention and our wisdom, understanding reality for the benefit of all beings, then we'll listen and discuss the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings today. Okay, so our topic today is the eight worldly concerns. The precious human life. Okay, and so this is one of the initial meditations at the beginning of the stages of the path. And the purpose of this meditation is to help us understand everything good that we have going for ourselves so that we take advantage of it and don't waste the precious opportunity that we have. So it's quite an important meditation, and it's a good antidote to depression and to feelings of purposelessness and meaninglessness. Okay, it's a good antidote to boredom and a good antidote to taking things for granted. Because I think a lot of times in our life we take things for granted. You know, we have quite a good living situation. We're not in the middle of a war zone. We have a good standard of living. We have friends and food and place to live and comparatively healthy. And yet we always find something to complain about, don't we? There's always something wrong. So this meditation is helping us to focus on all the things that are going right in our life and what we can use our life for. So it cuts down on the moaning and groaning and complaining. Okay. So, of course, if you enjoy moaning and groaning and complaining, I'm sure we can all find more things to moan and groan and complain about. Okay, but if we are getting tired of living our life like that, then this is a good opportunity to switch our perspective on life, okay, and to see what we have going for us. So one of the ways we start that is to actually look at our situation and, you know, imagine having severe health problems and then seeing that we are healthy now. Or imagine living in a very unfortunate situation and seeing how fortunate we are now. Or imagine living as somebody who has no spiritual interest and then seeing how precious it is that we do have spiritual interest. Okay? Or, you know, seeing how it would be to live in a place where there's no religious freedom, and then how fortunate we are to live in a place where we have that freedom. So when we do this kind of back and forth thing of really checking out how other beings live and seeing how we do have such good circumstances for spiritual practice, this helps us really appreciate them and make a strong determination to make good use of them. Okay. so then we have to ask, well, what does it mean to make good use of our life? What's the meaning of our life? What's the purpose? If we have a precious human situation, you know, what does it mean to make it useful and purposeful? Okay. Now, it's an interesting question to ask ourselves, because we've all made certain decisions in our life, and underlying those decisions, there's some, you know, wish to be happy. And what exactly did we think it was that was going to make us happy? Yeah? And are we looking out only for our own happiness? And if we're looking out for the happiness of others, who else? Just our friends and the people who are dear to us, or to other people beyond our own circle of near and dear ones? Okay? And what does it mean to make our life meaningful? Because, you know, we've made decisions in our lives trying to make our life meaningful, but how have we derived meaning from some of the decisions that we've made? You know, we've received some short-term pleasure from many of those decisions. But what about long-term meaning? Because long-term meaning and short-term pleasure are very, very different. Yeah? And anybody who has children knows that you try to instill in your kids a value for long-term benefit rather than short-term pleasure. And it starts with brushing your teeth, even though you don't like it, because it's going to be good for you later. And, you know, not eating too many sweets now, because it's going to cause problems later. So it starts with that, but then it goes far beyond that. And what really does brings meaning and purpose to our lives. So before hearing anything about Buddhism, I always had some sense that meaning and purpose must lie with being of benefit to others. You know? It just kind of seemed natural, because if we look out only for our own benefit, it seems so limited. Don't you think? You know? I mean, if we just count human beings, we're over, what, 7 billion now? And going up, and if we just take care of one, or even if we take care of two or three or four or five, it's limited, isn't it? Yeah. So it seemed to me that make, having a meaningful life had to have something to do with going past my own personal wants and needs. Little did I know at that time how difficult it is to go, mentally to go beyond our own personal wants and needs. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because who is it that we think about all day long as number one? Mm-hmm. Wee! Bing! You know? And so to try and change that mind to think about others really takes some work. And to try and change the mind from short-term benefit to long-term benefit also takes some work. Because even if we think about benefiting others, it's often the short-term. You know, I want to give food to somebody, which is, of course, excellent. But they'll eat and then they'll be hungry again in a few hours. So we're posed with the question of, you know, what is long-term benefit? If many of the things that we do to help others don't really free them from the situation completely, but just stop the pain temporarily. Yeah? We may give, they may open a clinic and treat people who are sick, but what about the whole thing of having a body that even if it gets well now, is going to get sick and die later? Yeah? So are we looking beyond the short-term benefit to the long-term benefit and long-term solutions. You know, usually in our society, when we think of long-term solutions, we'll think of structural changes in society. For example, not just giving somebody a meal now, but teaching that person a skill so they can get a job, so they can earn money and buy food themselves. And that's definitely beneficial. You know, giving them food now, teaching them a skill, without a doubt beneficial. Okay? But if you have a viewpoint that goes beyond just this life, then you want your solution to go beyond just this life. And somebody learning a skill in this life is not necessarily going to help them have a good rebirth in a future life. Yeah. Or what about helping them to attain liberation so that they don't have to get born in a body that gets old and sick and dies to start with? Because isn't that part of our problem at the beginning? That we're born in a body that gets old and sick and dies? We seldom question this, do we? You know, we just take our situation for granted. Well, here I am, I have this body, I have a mind, what's next? But we never question, how did I get this body? And who am I? And what happens at death when the mind separates from this body? Yeah? And do I want to get another body that's like this one, that also gets old and sick and dies, that also has to go through adolescence again? Somebody told me their main reason for wanting liberation is they did not want to have to go through adolescence again. Sounds like a good reason, doesn't it? You know, do you remember what it was like? Oh, crazy. Yeah. So, you know, to try and look more long-term, more expansively at how to create meaning and benefit in our lives. Okay. And so here, the Buddha proposed, you know, the first level of meaning and benefit is to prepare so that we can have a good life next rebirth. Because if we don't have a good life next rebirth, we won't be able to even benefit ourselves, let alone benefit anybody else. Okay? So to have a good life in the future life means a life like we have now, where we're a human being, we have health, we have human intelligence, we have spiritual interests, we live in a place where we can meet Dharma teachers and, you know, meet a supportive group and have materials to learn and study where the Buddha has taught, you know, to have this whole situation of really being able to learn and practice the teachings requires many, many factors to come together. So we want another life with that kind of situation. Yeah. Our kitties at the Abbey, maybe in a previous life they made many prayers to be born, you know, to live in a monastery in their future life. But they didn't create the cause to be born as humans. You know? So here they live in a monastery, but they can't make use of the situation, you know, spiritually. You'll see when we have our potluck lunch. You know. We're offering to the Buddha and they think that we should be offering to them. Yeah. So, you know, to prepare to have a good life in the future, I think, is something quite important. We prepare for old age, but we don't know that we're going to even live that long. Whereas, from a Buddhist viewpoint, future life is going to happen, but we seem to merrily go on our way as if it won't, even though actually it's a lot more definite than old age. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We go to all sorts of stuff to prepare for our old age, don't we? And yet, we don't even know if we're even going to live that long. It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. But when it comes to do things to prepare for our next life, we say, oh, that's too far away, you know, or that doesn't, I don't see it. Yeah, but we don't see our old age either. We just infer it because we see other people being old. In any case, you know, the first thing we have to do is have a good rebirth so that we can, you know, have a situation where at least we aren't in dire misery, whereby we can continue cultivating the path and work for the benefit of others. Of course, this entails a belief in rebirth, which I won't go into at this point, because it will take us way off our topic. But if you look in Open Heart, Clear Mind, there's a chapter about rebirth that will fill you in on some of this. And then the Buddha said another purpose in our life is to attain liberation from this constantly recurring cycle of death, sickness, aging, and rebirth. Okay. Now sometimes when we hear that, we go, well, I don't know if I really want liberation, because having this body is all I know, and who am I going to be if I don't have a body? You know what I mean? You know, it's like, well, even, okay, it gets old and sick and dies, but at least it enables me to be me. And if I don't have a body in a future life, who am I going to be? Yeah? So we have very strong eye grasping. Yeah? And it's strange, isn't it? Because the state of liberation exists where you have what's called a mental body, body created, you know, by the mind and by untainted karma. But we're afraid of that because it's new. And so we cling to something that's familiar even though it's pretty miserable. Okay? Because even in a regular way, we celebrate birth. But what about the rest? Aging, sickness, and death we don't celebrate. Yeah? So do we want to keep doing that whole thing again? Okay? So, seeking liberation, seeking a state of mental freedom whereby we're not obliged due to our own confusion and ignorance and craving to take this kind of body, but rather a situation where we have wisdom and can abide meditating on the nature of reality without disturbance. Yeah, certainly better than getting born and dying again and again and again, which we've already done countless times already, haven't we? Okay, and then not only liberation, but to seek full enlightenment whereby we have the tools which enable us to be of the greatest benefit to others and to even lead them out of the cycle of constantly recurring problems, the cycle of birth, aging, sickness, and death. Okay? And so that is the state of full Buddhahood, where our wisdom, compassion, skillful means, power, generosity, ethical conduct, and so on are fully perfected. And in addition, we have special abilities and powers that enable us to be of the greatest benefit to others, because we don't have the limitations of our present ignorance and our present self-centeredness. Because lots of times we do have compassion for others, but we don't know what to do that's going to help. Yeah, have you ever been in that situation? You know, we don't know the other person well enough. We don't understand the situation. We don't understand, you know, all the causes and conditions that have come prior to this. We don't understand the person's tendencies and dispositions. Yeah. We don't understand what new factors could come in the future that would influence it. Okay? But as a Buddha, we've eliminated all the obscurations to having this kind of knowledge. And so when we have that kind of knowledge and combine it with compassion that wants others to be free of suffering and love that wants them to have happiness in its causes, then we can really have skillful means in being able to benefit others. Yeah. And so aiming for these longer term goals, first of good rebirth, then of liberation, then of full enlightenment, this is something that gives a lot of meaning to our life, because the results last for a long time. Okay, it brings happiness now as well as in the future. And even if we have to sacrifice some of our present happiness for future benefit, we're willing to do that in the same way that you teach your kids to sacrifice eating sweets for the benefit of having good teeth as an adult. Okay? So, you know, sacrificing certain things isn't seen as something awful, but as something that will take you actually to your deeper meaning and purpose and longer-term benefit. Okay? And so the Buddha proposed those as, you know, what gives meaning and purpose to our human life. So even if we can't accomplish liberation and full enlightenment in this lifetime, at least creating the causes for a good rebirth where we'll be able to continue practicing in future lives with that motivation of being able to benefit others to the greatest extent. Doing that is something that's tremendously beneficial, because it's really including others in our wish, and it's including a benefit that lasts long term that we're seeking for self and others. And so you compare that kind of aspiration and what we do to make our life meaningful in that way with, wanting to go out and have a good dinner and go to a good movie. And don't you get like a different sense in your mind about what's worthwhile and what's not? Yeah? Because, you know, a good dinner and a good movie, that's nice. We've had a lot of them already, haven't we? Yeah? And yet it hasn't brought any satisfaction. We've had many good times with our friends. And yet, at the end of the day, we're always left wanting to have another good time, because somehow what we've had so far hasn't brought lasting pleasure, lasting happiness or security. Okay? And so now what we're doing is trying to aim for something that's going to be much longer term and much broader than our own pleasure of, you know, having a good meal and a nice movie, which of course are nice, but, you know, compared to really being able to die peacefully and to have a sense of long-term purpose in our lives, those kinds of things pale. And we say, you know, it's nice, but I'd rather spend my time doing something else. Yeah? The same way we make many priorities and many decisions now according to what we think will bring us longer term benefit. Okay? So in our discussion of precious human life, there's identifying what the precious human life is, which I talked a little bit about. And then there's discussing what the meaning and purpose was, which I just talked about. And then the third part is to talk about how rare and difficult it is to actually have the opportunity we have now with this life to make our lives meaningful. Okay? Because, like I said, we tend to take our situation very much for granted, when in fact it's quite a rare situation. So before I talked about just how, just how to have spiritual yearning and to make spirituality an important aspect of your life, that's an aspect of ourself that we often take for granted. But it isn't something to be taken for granted and assumed, because many people don't have that, or they have it but they bury it. Yeah, And it gets buried either by the stresses of this life and all the things that they have to take care of this life, or it gets buried by seeking for pleasure, or it gets buried because they're just not interested. Yeah. I remember being at Bodh Gaya, which is the site of the Buddha's enlightenment. And so it's a very holy place, and a place you go where you think of, you know, what would it be like if I could become enlightened, you know, and give yourself that possibility and that inspiration, thinking about all the enlightened beings there have been. And yet when you go there, there's a number of people who live there who just see it as a place to make money by selling Buddhist trinkets. Yeah, or by selling tea, or by selling meals, or whatever. And for them, this holy place is simply a place to make a buck. Yeah, no feeling of it being a holy place, no feeling of, you know, I want to benefit others, or anything like that. Yeah, so when you see that, then you think, well, you know, I could have easily been born there with that kind of attitude. You know, it's rare to have the situation I have now where, even though I'm not born in Bodh Gaya, India, but at least I have the opportunity to go there. And more important, I have, you know, this spiritual yearning and aspiration. Do you see what I mean? It's hard to have that situation. So many other factors in our life that are conducive for Dharma practice. For example, having enough food, having enough material things so that we aren't starving and on the street. We take it very much for granted. And yet, you know, how many of the citizens of this planet live below the poverty line? And why weren't we born as one of them? Yeah? Why were we born who we are, and why weren't we born in Sudan, you know, or in a place where there's constant drought and poverty? We easily could have been born there. Yeah. So we aren't, and that's a rare situation, isn't it? Yeah. Or if you consider how many animals and insects there are on this planet and compare it to the number of human beings, we're way outnumbered, aren't we? Way, way outnumbered. Yeah. So it's much easier to have rebirth as an animal or as an insect than to have a human rebirth. Yeah. And why weren't we born as, you know, an animal or an insect? And how easily it would be in the future to be reborn that way if we act like animals and insects in this lifetime. Okay? Because this brings in the whole idea of karma. You know, our actions, mental, physical, verbal actions, create the causes for our situation, for what we will be reborn as. So it's not a reward, it's not a punishment, it's just we create the causes, we experience the result. So you see some human beings who actually act worse than animals. So if they were to be born as an animal, it kind of, you know, you can see the connection, can't you? Of course we don't want anybody to be reborn, you know, in a rebirth where they can't think properly and where their lives are controlled by others, like animals' lives are. But we can at least see the connection, how it would be possible. Yeah. I mean, sometimes human beings really do act worse than animals, don't we? Yeah. I mean, animals don't have wars over honor and pride and things like that the way human beings do. So, you know, just seeing that our situation is very rare and very precious really helps wake us up. Because otherwise we might say, well, you know, spiritual practice is good. And yeah, I can make my life meaningful. But there's a lot of other things I want to do in my life first. I want to go out and have a good time, and I want to travel, and I want to do this, and I want to do that. And, you know, there's so many things to experience and know and have pleasure and have some fun. And, you know, so I can always do Dharma practice later. Yeah, there's always later to do it, you know. And even if not this life, well, next life, you know, I'll just do it later. Yeah. Because, you know, Dharma practice, I have to study, I have to meditate, my knees hurt, my back hurts, you know. Of course, if somebody paid us to sit cross-legged, we would happily do it for the money, wouldn't we? Yeah. But for spiritual benefit, oh, too difficult. Yeah. And we get up early in the morning to go to work, don't we? Because somebody's paying us money. But to get up early in the morning and meditate, too difficult. Yeah. So what do we value more, money or spiritual opportunity? This is saying something about our priorities, isn't it? Yeah. So, you know, when we think of the meaning and purpose of our life and how rare and difficult it is to have it, that shifts our priorities. Okay, and instead of having the mañana mentality, I'll do it tomorrow mentality, we think, you know, I'm very fortunate that I'm alive right now. I need to do it now. I need to do it today. Yeah, and I need to do it in a way with as few distractions as possible. In other words, without letting my mind go here, go there, get confused in all sorts of other things that I know are not really good for me, but that I get caught up in anyway. Okay? So this life and precious human rebirth really helps us make clear decisions, set our priorities, and start going in the right direction. And so that's why it's one of the first meditations that we do. So that we don't take our situation for granted. And so that we wake up every morning and say, wow, how fortunate I am. I'm still alive and I still have this opportunity to practice the Buddha Dharma and, you know, grow spiritually and prepare for future lives and attain liberation and enlightenment. How fortunate I am. And we wake up with that feeling of fortune instead of waking up with, oh, I gotta work again. You know? Yeah. But instead, we really wake up with some kind of joy in our lives, which I think is quite important. Okay, so that's a general explanation of this meditation on precious human life and the three parts of it. The factors that make a precious human life so we can identify it. You know, what is meaning and purpose, and then also how rare and precious it is to have this opportunity. There's one other aspect of meaning and purpose that I want to add in, and that is that with a precious human life, we have the opportunity to make our life meaningful moment by moment with each activity we do. So depending upon what our motivation is, we can make activities that used to be mundane activities into Dharma activities, into the path to enlightenment. Okay? So, a few days ago, Dallas was making a video of us working in the forest. And so she came and videoed all of us, and I was sawing and lopping and doing all these kinds of things and having a very good time at it. But she said to me, what are you doing? You know, and why are you doing this? And so I said, well, you know, I'm creating, in one way, a good habitat for many kind of birds and species to come, because by thinning the forest, you know, the forest will be healthier and the forests that have different kinds of trees of different ages are more likely to have different kinds of species and birds where they all live pleasantly together, you know. And so I'm doing that, creating a good environment for others. And also I'm doing this purification practice because this, what a dog thicket, is that the word? I'm saying it right, dog. Anyway, the forest is a mess, you know, and there's like branches and dead stuff and just all this stuff. And it's really like cleaning out your mind, you know, to me. I mean, I think that's why I enjoy it so much, is that it's really symbolic of cleaning out all the junk in our mind that is dead and useless and tangled up and prevents us from walking clearly, you know? So when you're in there and you're getting rid of these old, you know, the pulling down the dead stuff and clearing space, and then it's like in your mind, you know, all these old grudges I'm getting rid of, all these old self-images that are useless I'm getting rid of, you know, all these ridiculous ways of thinking that I have, sometime I'm getting rid of those and cleaning it all out. Okay? So you work doing it with that kind of motivation as well, you know? And then also there's so much natural beauty. And so I told you I was making offering to the Buddha, you know, all these beautiful trees and the sky and the wildflowers, and so making offering. Okay? So, you know, that's an example of how you could make something that some people would see as, you know, hard work into something that becomes part of your spiritual activity and something that's actually quite a lot of fun. Yeah? So any kind of activity we do in our daily life, we can transform in this way, you know, by setting our motivation in a different way and by making the action symbolic of part of what we're trying to do spiritually. Okay? So like when you're washing dishes, you know, you're cleaning the defilements of sentient beings' mind with the soap of wisdom, you know. And you just think of that. And then you do the dishes, you know, slowly and mindfully, and you think, wow, wouldn't it be nice to clean, you know, I know somebody who's really hung up about this. I can clean that from their mind and, you know, clean all the grudges people have in the world and all the low self-esteem people have. I can clean all that away. And you concentrate on, you know, aspiring to do that when you're washing the dishes. And that's completely different than, oh, here are the dishes again. How can I do them as fast as I can and get done with it? Yeah? So you completely change your motivation and your way of being. And it brings more happiness and contentment and fulfillment now, as well as transforms that action into something that creates good karma, which we dedicate for the benefit of others and for our own spiritual progress. So that's another meaning and purpose of this life. Okay, so having gone through that, what I'd like to do, because we have a few minutes left, is open it to questions and comments. And let you say what is on your mind and what you're thinking about.
It seems to me that I can't do this meditation without also doing it with the meditation on death. It seems like without the recognition of death, meaning and purpose kind of gets lost.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're saying that you can't, you know, when you do this meditation, automatically you're bringing in the meditation on impermanence and death. Because without it, the fact of having meaning and purpose in this life just gets lost. And that's very true. You know, I think understanding our own mortality is what makes us question what's the meaning and purpose of my life. You know, because knowing we won't have this opportunity forever, then it's like, okay, well, what am I going to do with it? You know, and what is of lasting benefit? Because when I die, you know, and I look back on this life, what will I have done that I consider to have been of meaning and purpose? You know, because when we die, yeah, I think, you know, if you think about the kind of mind that you would like to die with, yeah, I think we would all like to die with a sense of that our meaning has, that our life has been meaningful for others, that somehow we've contributed to the well-being of this planet and to the well-being of other living beings who live on it, you know? I think we would like to die with a feeling that we've used our life in that way. I haven't heard of anybody dying with regret that they haven't worked more overtime. Yeah? And I haven't heard of anybody dying with regret that they didn't go out to dinner and see more movies. Yeah? But what is it, the thing that people regret at the time of death? They regret their stinginess, whether it's financial stinginess or emotional stinginess. Yeah?
That they didn't forgive someone.
Yeah, they regret that they didn't forgive or that they didn't apologize. Yeah, these are the kinds of things that people regret at the time of death. They don't regret, you know, not getting the Olympic medal or, you know, not getting to the being the CEO of the corporation. Yeah. They regret, you know, not having made their life meaningful in some way by contributing to the welfare of others, or at least by not harming them. And so when we think of death and put the, you know, that the fact that our life isn't going to last forever, you know, in our awareness, then it really helps us make good priorities and really ask ourselves on a deeper level, what is the meaning and purpose? Did you want to amplify on that at all? Okay.
I like to concentrate sometimes on the rare view of the precious human life. I actually have a little turtle. Next to the story of the tortoise through the ring and put the little turtle next to my nightstand.
The little turtle what?
The little turtle next to my nightstand. It's just a little iron piece.
Oh, okay.
And there's a little moth. Anyway, it's an opportunity to reflect.
Yeah, it has. Let me fill those of you in who with the story that Mike is talking about. In one of the sutras, the Buddha gave the analogy of how rare it is for us to have the opportunity we have now to practice the teachings. He gave the situation of a blind turtle who's in a huge, vast ocean, who comes to the surface of the ocean once every 100 years. On the surface of the ocean is one golden ring, yeah, one golden yolk, and it's floating all around because, you know, it's getting buffeted here and there by the waves and the wind and everything. Plus the turtle's moving all around underneath, and he's blind and he can't see the yolk, and he only comes up once every 100 years, and he's only up for a minute and then goes down to the bottom of the ocean. And so what's the chance of that blind turtle putting his head through that golden yolk? Yeah. There's not a huge chance. There's a chance, but it's not a huge chance. So in a similar way, in this ocean of cyclic existence, where we are buffeted around by our afflictions and karma, what is the chance of those of us who are blinded by ignorance, you know, having a golden rebirth as with a precious human life that lasts comparatively only for a moment compared to other lives at the bottom of the ocean? You know, there's a chance, but not a huge one. Okay? So he has his mala for the golden ring and a little turtle there. I have some friends in Mexico and they have real turtles in their house. Yeah? And there's no golden ring either. Yeah, I guess it's floating in the vast ocean. So, yeah.
I was wondering if you'd be willing to comment just a little on keeping a meditation like this fresh. I think sometimes it's really easy to wake up and say, oh, I'm so lucky to wake up today. Yep, okay, let's go. Or you just kind of go through the same thing over and over again. It kind of becomes routine and it stops having that effect of, wow, okay, yeah. If you have any
commentary
on how to keep that alive.
Yeah. Okay, so how to keep the awareness of this meditation alive instead of going back to taking it for granted? I think one factor is doing the meditation frequently. Yeah, because when we really bring it to mind in a deep way, not just saying, I have a precious human life, what's next? But really thinking about it, you know, and thinking, what would happen if I were born like this? And really putting yourself in that situation, you know. And so doing this meditation frequently, imagining these different situations, and then coming back to, oh, I'm so glad I am who I am right now, and here's what makes my life meaningful. Yeah. And then also all these examples and things about how rare it is and how rare it is to create the karma to be born as we have now, because, you know, having the opportunity we have now is due to so much karma we created in previous lives. And are we creating that same kind of karma now? Or are we too busy creating other kinds of karma now? Yeah. In other words, are we practicing good ethical discipline? Are we being generous? Are we practicing patience? Yeah. Or are we just kind of going along in our life, kind of, you know, well, how can I get my happiness? Yeah. So doing this kind of evaluation and self-questioning on a regular basis, and then, like he said, bringing in the fact that we are going to die and this opportunity is going to end, then that really makes the meditation much more vivid. But, you know, just this whole thing, you know, when I say make other examples of things, one thing, for example, that comes to my mind quite easily is many years ago, many, many years ago, I was invited to Denmark to teach. And one of the people who invited me worked in a home for, I don't know the politically correct term, from mentally handicapped, special needs, okay, special
needs.
Mentally challenged and special needs children, who, is it okay to say below average intelligence? What?
That's all right.
That's okay to say? Anyway, the kids, whatever vocabulary I use, I wanted to go and meet these kids, so she took me with her to work. And this is in Denmark, a very modern, wealthy country. And she worked in an institution, so I walked into this room that was so colorful. It was the stupendous, beautiful room with beads and gadgets and colors and this kind of joyful music and just sensually, you know, really stimulating and pleasant. And at first I thought, you know, I was there and it's like, oh, okay, where am I? And who's here, you know? And then I started hearing these groans. And, oh, and, you know, these kind of strange sounds. And then I started looking more closely. And I saw children, okay? Some who were maybe 12 years old, lying in cribs, all curled up. Some who were lying on their belly on a kind of plank so that they, with wheels, so that they can move.
A little cart.
Yeah. It was a little cart, but it didn't have sides. It was just a plank. Some kids who were just curled up amidst a bunch of like soft foam balls. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that they wouldn't injure themselves. You know, I began to look, and here were all these children in different shapes and forms who had, you know, this kind of challenge in their life that wasn't going to get remedied in this life. You know, they were going to have this their whole life. And so to me, that's always stuck in my mind. It's like, well, I could have so easily been born like that. You know, there's absolutely no reason for me to be arrogant. I so easily could have been born like that. But I wasn't, you know. And here were kids, and they're suffering in a wealthy country. And I've seen kids like that in India, where they don't have the beautiful colors and nice music and everything. And so easily that could have been me. And how would I have practiced the Dharma being born in that situation? You know, here you have a human rebirth at a time when the Buddha's taught, but you can't use it. Okay? So you really contemplate that. And then you come back to, well, whoa, you know, how fortunate I am right now. I'm not born like this at this time, you know. And I haven't had a serious accident, which has put me in, you know, a mentally incapacitated state, although that could happen before the end of this life. So how, you know, fortunate I am, and how I've really got to use this life now to make it meaningful and purposeful in the long term. Okay? So when you meditate like that, it really makes it quite fresh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, how can we build confidence, like some kind of steps to build confidence in this state beyond this kind of body? Like you kind of, when I do the meditation, kind of run into this blank wall because I don't have any sense of getting beyond this kind of mm-hmm. body. And I, you know, I can do it through trust of my teachers. Mm-hmm. But are there other steps how to get confident that we actually...
Okay, so how do we develop confidence that there is a future life
outside of this
particular body? Okay, well, you know, if we think of the mind as a caused phenomena, you know, as a phenomena that is conditioned, that has causes, and that because it's produced and has causes, brings results, then what do we think happens at the time of death? Can something that has always had the tendency to bring a result, you know, completely stop and end at the time of death? I mean, do you think you're going to go into total non-existence at death time?
No, I'm not talking about this particular body. I'm talking about always taking another body rather than going non-physical.
Okay.
Not just this particular life, but
okay.
The whole type.
Okay, so the whole idea of getting beyond a body that is under the influence of karma and afflictions.
Yeah.
How can you even imagine it?
Right.
Okay. Well, can you imagine having a mind that's beyond karma and afflictions?
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you have to, because if you can imagine having a mind that is free of ignorance, anger, and attachment, yeah, if you can see those as mental factors that can be eliminated because they have counteractive forces, then if you can have a mind that's free of them, then there's not going to be a cause to take a body that gets old and sick and dies. So then there must be some kind of continuity of mind outside of that kind of body, which brings you to either having the mental body of an arhat or, you know, the mental body of a bodhisattva, whereby you're able to manifest in different realms to be of great benefit to others. Yeah. And to ask yourself, do I really want to keep getting a body that gets old and sick and dies? Do you? Mm-hmm. You know?
I want to get one that doesn't.
You don't want what?
I want to get a body that doesn't get old, sick, and dies.
Yeah, okay. So body. So it, have you seen that kind of body that doesn't get old, sick, and dies? Yeah? Okay, then aim for that one.
That's the one to aim for.
Yeah? So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about a mental body or a bodhisattva's, you know, or a Buddha's emanation body. But that body isn't made of atoms and molecules, and it's not under the influence of karma and afflictions. Okay. And the purpose of having that body is not just to have a body so you have an identity, because you're way beyond having an identity at that point. The purpose of having that kind of body is to be a benefit to others. Okay. But you know, even within samsara, there's a state of existence without this kind of gross body. You know, in the formless realm, they don't have this kind of gross body. But the problem there is they still have the afflictions and karma. Yeah, so even though you might attain high sublime states of concentration and be born in a formless realm without wisdom, then in the long term you're not really solving your problem. Okay, so let's sit quietly for a few minutes. I call this digestion meditation. To really think about what we heard so we can remember it and take it with us. And then let's dedicate the positive energy that we created and send it out into the universe with our aspirations that it will bring about the health and well-being of each and every living being and the full enlightenment of each and every living being. Due to this merit, many wisdom, I attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering, May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore.